I appreciate Nathan for being willing to switch with me. That's why I'm doing both singing and preaching this morning, because we've got yet another round of go-lives coming up later this month, and it would be very difficult for me to prepare and deliver a lesson in the middle of that, especially since I still don't totally know what the schedule is at this point. So, but, you know, that topic is actually very bound up in the topic I want to talk about this morning, which is the topic of happiness. This is actually a lesson that I gave probably about 6 years ago, but it's pretty topical for me today because, honestly, I've really been struggling for a while now because a lot of the pressures that are on me and the fact that I'm really not happy in my work, and I'm hoping that that is a valley that I'm going to be able to get through, you know. But we all go through those times, you know. I mean, all of us have times that our jobs aren't what we wish that they were, you know. It's nothing unique with me, but right now I'm the one really being affected by it. And so this was something that, as I looked at, I said this would be a good one for me to hear myself preach. So it starts with an excerpt from a column from Sam Venable. It says, "I can't decide whether Knoxville's latest national ranking makes me happy or unhappy. There's plenty to argue either way. As reported by your favorite morning newspaper and business writer Roger Harris, the website Career Bliss just listed K-Town as the 26th most unhappy city in America. We were even sadder than Nashville, 29th, but leagues behind Columbia, Tennessee, which ranked 42nd in the most happy division. Definitely not a good showing for Music City or Big Orange Country. The findings were based on a variety of criteria, mostly related to employment, work environment, compensation, growth opportunities, relationships with bosses and coworkers, blah, blah, blah. Fine, assuming vocational matters are your primary personal barometer," which is a message I kind of needed to be reminded of. "But I submit there are other factors to consider. Climate, for instance. I'm at my most joyous when the weather is in Goldilocks mode, not too hot, not too cold." I'm not sure why Sam was using East Tennessee as a good example of that, because it seems like spring and fall last about a week and a half apiece around here. But anyway, then there's proximity to family. True, this can create a huge spike in angst among siblings, parents, cousins, aunts and uncles who quarrel frequently. I'm lucky that my clan A gets along smoothly and B lives close by. Gotta have plenty of room to roam as well. With the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, Cherokee National Forest, and TVA's Great Lakes of the South in my backyard, I couldn't be more recreationally delighted. All that being said, the business of happiness versus unhappiness invariably boils down to what mothers have been telling their children since the dawn of creation, to wit, this decision rests primarily within. If you're determined to be happy, you will be despite less than pleasant circumstances. Conversely, you can elect to be miserable even during the best of times. I'll never forget a Thanksgiving story circa 1977 told by the late Jerry Anderson. Early in his ministry, Jerry had been asked to perform the United Methodist Church's home blessing ritual at a Polk County logging camp. Following scribbled directions, he hiked to the site. What he discovered was stereotypical Southern Appalachian squalor. Everything from the dilapidated sawmill slab shack to homemade clothing and furniture spoke of hopeless destitution. Yet in the midst of this poverty lived one of the most vibrant, devoted, and contented families he'd ever met. When the ceremony was over, Jerry said, the young wife turned to her husband and cried, "How lucky we are. Now, honey, we have everything. Happy, sad, it's your choice." So, again, some things here that are useful, and yet it's sort of like maybe at the start of the conversation, what he maybe dances around a little bit but doesn't get into, that as Christians we should definitely be happy because there are many things that we have to be happy about. And we find ourselves unhappy, it may be because we are dwelling on the wrong things. Of course, that's what he's kind of getting at. You know, we can have great circumstances, and yet if all we're focused on is the things we don't have or the things that we wish were different, then we're never going to be contented. We're never going to be happy. And so it's important for us to remember to count our blessings and to focus on the things, because as followers of Christ, we have a bedrock that those who do not simply are missing. You know, I mean, even as bad as things get at work, I know that no matter, even, and, you know, I'm not happy with them, but they could get a whole lot worse, a whole lot worse than they are. And yet, even if they get much, much worse than they are, none of that has anything to do with my eternal salvation. None of that has to do with the spiritual family that I have here in this place. And those are things that are much more important in the grand eternal sense than this temporary job that, even though for me it's not very temporary, I've been doing it a long time, and I'm committed to it. And yet, compared to much more important things, it's irrelevant. Over in Psalms, the 128th chapter, and I'm going to be fairly brief this morning because I'm rapidly losing my voice. I did not expect that, but these things happen. Let's just read the entire 128th Psalm because it's fairly short. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you eat the labor of your hands, you shall be happy and it shall be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine in the very heart of your house, your children like olive plants all around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you out of Zion, and may you see the good of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Yes, may you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. Now, that's a very beautiful passage, speaking very simply of the contentment that a man who follows the Lord and is devoted to his family can receive just in his simple home life. It says, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. You know, brethren, as we see people who seem determined to make the wrong decision on every side around us, let's not forget that God has something better in store for those who will follow him. And not just eternally, although that's the most important thing. But when we look at this, you know, we think about all the people who are acting in ways that this scene is impossible for them. They either are not faithful to their wife, or, you know, as a man, or they have chosen not to follow God's teachings, even in the way that this should work. They have abandoned their children in many cases, you know, because of their own selfish decisions. And, you know, these aren't strangers. I know many of them. You probably know many of them. People who have just simply chosen not to follow God's simple teachings. And as a result, these things aren't part of their life. You know, we have such blessings in the things that God has commanded us to do and the life that he has intended for us. In Proverbs, the 29th chapter, Proverbs 29:18, where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint, but happy is he who keeps the law. You know, the idea here is that this is a people or a society that's no longer listening to God's revelation. This is where there is no revelation. There is no I have a prophetic vision footnote here. And the idea is that these are people who aren't being guided by God, and the people have cast off restraint. Does that sound familiar to you? It sure does to me. You know, we live in a society that has cast off restraint, that seems determined that anything that resembles restraint must be actively attacked and cast off. And yet it says, happy is he who keeps the law. Because God knows what it is that we need, and he has given us the commandments that he has given us for our own best interests. In Isaiah, the 12th chapter, starting in verse 1, and in that day you will say, O Lord, I will praise you, though you are angry with me. Your anger is turned away, and you comfort me. Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid. For Yah, the Lord, is my strength and song. He also has become my salvation. Therefore, with joy, you will draw water from the wells of salvation. And in that day you will say, praise the Lord, call on his name, declare his deeds among the people. Make mention that his name is exalted. Sing to the Lord, for he has done excellent things. This is known in all the earth. Cry out and shout, O inhabitant of Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in your midst. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate you, brother. You may not have known that this is the verse that the song, first song we sang came from. But once you read it, it's pretty obvious that the entire song is pretty much lifted straight from Isaiah 12. But and that's the idea. You know, the songs that I have led this morning and many of the ones that I will lead for the remainder of this service are related to this idea of joy and happiness in the Lord, because that's where it has to come from. And he's saying, you know, he says in verse 3, therefore with joy you will draw water from the wells of salvation. If we know what it's like not to be saved, then shouldn't we approach these wells of salvation with joy? You know, shouldn't we be happy with the fact that God has seen fit to give us this relationship with him, that we can have the hope of eternal life? that we can be cleansed from our past sins. I mean, these should be things that we should be grateful for and content in. And if we find ourselves that we're discontent, sometimes it's time, and again, I say this to myself, to reevaluate and to have a different attitude about things. You know, sometimes it's easy to dwell on the negative. And that sounds, you know, it's so hard when you see things that as you were a young person, you grow up and you considered them trite. And then you see them play out in your own life, you know? And then, but how do you put those, that back into words that don't sound just as trite as the words that you rejected when you were younger? I don't know if that makes sense to you, but those of us who are getting older probably have had a similar experience. There were things that when you were younger, somebody who was older than you tried to tell you something and you said, boy, you are just the cheesiest person I have ever heard in my life. And then you turn around and you have to actually try to get through those things yourself without mommy and daddy shielding you from all this stuff. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, things are a little rougher than I maybe anticipated they were going to be. And I have to find a way to get through this without being shielded from all this stuff. And the fact is that turning back to God is the best way to do that. When we follow his paths, when we do the things that he has commanded, he has given them to us so that we can follow him and we can be content on this earth knowing that something better awaits. But not just that, that when we show this love for one another, for our spiritual family, we will help one another through these things. And that it can be a great blessing if we will do the things that we're commanded. But he says, you know, make mention that his name is exalted. Sing to the Lord, for he has done excellent things. This is known in all the earth. You know, we should be grateful for a God such as ours that is so great. You know, we talked about, there was a sermon on mythology recently. You know, those gods were so inferior to our God. You know, who would worship a God that offered so little when, you know, when you look at our God, there's nothing really that he doesn't offer. And we're so fortunate for that. Over in Colossians, the first chapter. Read 9 through 12. For this reason we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing him, being fruitful in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might, according to his glorious power, for all patience and long-suffering with joy, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in the light. You know, he's saying here that Paul's prayer for the Colossians is that they would be filled with the knowledge of his will, that they would know what it was they were to do, and then that they would turn around and do it, that they would walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing him and being fruitful and continuing to learn. You know, that they would learn enough to do what was right, and then that they would continue to increase in the knowledge of God as well as in the things that they did in his service. And to be thankful to him for these things, and to be patient and long-suffering with joy. And you know, that can be the trick, brethren, right? To be not only to be patient, it's one thing to be patient, and you might be patient and sullen. You know, like, oh, I'm just going to pout and get through this. And you know, that's not what God is calling us to do. He's calling us to be patient with joy. And if we find that we're not being patient with joy, maybe we need to try a little harder on the fully pleasing him and walking worthy of the Lord part. And, you know, it's at least worth a shot, you know? I mean, if Paul is telling us that this is his prayer for the Colossians, then it might be a shot for us as we find ourselves in times that are difficult to try to draw nearer to God and to try to walk worthy of him, that we might be patient with joy, understanding what it is that we're working for. And again, brethren, when I preach this, I am preaching it to myself, and the rest of you are just getting to hear me do that to a certain extent, because I know that it's something that we all struggle with from time to time. But, you know, beautiful words here, but maybe difficult sometimes to put into practice. And yet, I know that as we look within our lives, we can all find places that we say, you know, am I really walking worthy of the Lord? Am I fully pleasing him? When I do this, is this something that is pleasing before God? And it may not just be the things that we're doing that might not be pleasing to God. Are we failing to do things that would be pleasing to God? To him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. And yeah, that's a high bar. I think I mentioned that in my last sermon. But it's one that God is calling us to do, because when we saw Christ here on this earth, we did not see him passing by opportunities to do good because it was inconvenient for him at the time. And then my last verse this morning, in Hebrews, the 12th chapter. This is actually right before the passage that Aaron read about chastening. But it's interesting, the context here. And this is a... I was at a place a number of years ago where I had the opportunity to hear somebody who is denominational speak. And he spoke about these two verses. And I felt like he missed the point so badly that it like drove it home to me in a way. I mean, these verses have had a special place in my heart ever since, just because of the sheer miss that was given by this man. Hebrews 12, starting in verse 1, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses..." And so I want to stop and talk about that for just a second. You know, when I get into a poor me type situation, I need to remember there are a cloud of witnesses around me that have had it much worse than I have, who God has found acceptable. And if they can do it, I can too. But in order to do that, I got to break out of my own funk and realize where I stand in relationship to these people. "Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." And that gets back to what he was talking about before. You know, this idea of patience and long-suffering with joy is the same idea as endurance. You know, Friday night was, you know, the end of a, fortunately, short week at work, but it was still intense because next week from Tuesday is we're going live with our next set of sites, and it has a new set of challenges. So the end of this week, and I told Mom that I was going to get over and at least get her front yard done, mowed, but the backyard, it had been a really long time since I had gotten to it. And I didn't really want to do it at all. But I was like, well, at least let me get over there and get the front yard knocked out. And I got that done fairly quickly. And I'm like, I got to get that backyard done. I just don't have any choice. And then I realized that the light was going to run out before I did. And unfortunately, that was where it was good that it was so long, because even in the extreme gloom, it was easy to see that this is much taller than this. I can kind of, I haven't been back to look at it in the daylight, and I don't think I really want to look at the job I did, but at least it's somewhat hacked down. But the point is, there was a point about halfway through that I was like, I'm not going to finish this tonight. I'm going to run out of light, and I don't have anything left in me. And yet I managed to get it done. And then the next day, I was very grateful for the fact that I had gotten it done, right? We all have situations like that if we're of a certain age. We all have something where we managed to make ourselves push through something and we were glad we did it. And that's exactly what we can look at when we talk about this endurance, this long-suffering with joy. If we stand before God on the last day and hear, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant," there is nothing that we will have gone through in this life that will not have been worth it 10,000 times over. And that is the endurance that he is calling us to have. And we can have it with joy, knowing that he has promised us something that he will deliver. And then the second verse here, we should do this by looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. What was the joy that was before Jesus? Was it sitting down at the right hand of the throne of God? He had that. You know, that's kind of like me saying, I'm going to work real hard to get my paid for automobile. I mean, I've paid for my own, my automobile. I don't have to worry. Jesus Christ was God. Through him, you know, without him, nothing was created that was created. And yet he did this for the joy that was set before him. What was that joy? And I think it was a joy we talked about in our class this morning, that we could be reconciled, that we could have this grace given to us when none of us could stand before God on our own, but with Jesus there to stand with us, we can be accepted, that he will intercede for us, and he can because he has done this, that he has shed his blood for our redemption. And that's the joy that was before him. And that was, you know, I can't even remember exactly how he missed the point, but that was the thing that the guy just missed, was that the whole point of the joy that was set before Jesus was us. That we could be reconciled, that we could be his children. And that is his joy. So if we're going to look unto Jesus to say, what is our joy? It needs to be this relationship. It needs to be this reconciliation that was paid for with his precious blood. In just a moment, we're going to take of the emblems to remember this. Let's think about that, that Jesus, as he died, was thinking about joy in our reconciliation. Even through all the awful things that he went through, he says, despising the shame, endured the cross, despising the shame, because now he has sat down at the right hand of God, and now we can be called his people. You know, he's gone through this. We need to go through this so we can seize the reward that God has promised us. And brethren, that's my lesson this morning, and hopefully it will help you, hopefully it will help me, to look at these things and to take them into our hearts and to make application to them in our lives in the days and weeks to come. If you're here this morning and you're not in a right relationship with God, then you know, that's not the joy that we're talking about this morning. You have to get right with God before you can have this joy. If you've never become a Christian, you need to become one. And, you know, that's why he died for you, so that you could become a follower of his by doing the things that he said, by repenting, by believing on his name, by confessing his name before men. You could be saved. But if you've done those things, as many of us here have, and you need to repent, if you need help, then we want to do that, because, again, that's one of the great joys, is that we have each other to lean on. We all want to get to heaven together. So if you're subject in any way, won't you come as we stand together at this time and sing?